good.
I want to make sure we have it.
One thing that happened was it made it a little hard. Nothing on our end, nothing.
Good morning, everybody. Good to see everybody here this morning. I'm going to go ahead and call this Human Resources Committee meeting to order this morning, and it's nice to see everybody. You know, I did make a mistake this morning. I woke up and got on Twitter, and which is a horrible way to start the day, any day, but especially today with all the tragedy that we've been experiencing over the past week with the shootings. And so I think I need a palate cleanser this morning to get my mind in the right frame of mind. So if you don't mind, join me in just a moment of silence for the victims of these shootings and their communities. Thank you all. All right, so moving on to business this morning here at HR Committee. Megan, it's nice to see you and your staff here this morning. We'll move on to item number one, which is approval of the minutes from the May 6th, 2019 meeting.
I make a motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second for approval. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion passes. Moving on to item number two, which is public comment. Is there anyone from the public who would like to make a comment regarding HR matters today for the committee's consideration? Seeing none, we'll move on to item number three, which is a presentation regarding staff recruitment and retention efforts here in the town. I asked for this presentation this morning, not because there's any particular issue here, but as an employee in a public agency myself, now and for a couple of decades, I know that when the economy gets better, generally speaking, the workforce gets tighter. And so it becomes more difficult to recruit, especially in public agencies and towns and municipalities. So I thought it was a good time for us to kind of take a look at how we are doing in terms of recruitment of qualified and highly qualified staff, and also once we get them in the door, what we're doing to retain them. And if there are any issues here, what this committee and what council can do to support any problems that might be in those areas. So I've asked Megan to present some information for us this morning just for our consideration. And I think generally it looks pretty good, but there may be some problem areas we're not aware of. So Megan, I will turn it over to you.
Okay, great. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. So today I'm going to go over recruitment, what our process looks like, length of recruitment, onboarding, retention, and what we're doing currently to assess and address R&R issues, recruitment and retention, not rest and relaxation. So some of you may not know what our current process is. So the HR department puts vacancies up. We sometimes do some internally, or we use websites, Municipal Association, LinkedIn, Indeed, some trade-specific ones when we need to. And then the departments take it from there. They review the applications, they interview candidates, they make contingent job offers, they contact references. And then HR does the screening process for their criminal history, education, credit reports. Depends on the position, what's required, but usually criminal history for everyone, education and credit for certain. And then we get those results, and we pass it on to the department. And then we start towards the onboarding process. One of your questions, I think, Mr. Bremer, was do we ever use contracted help? And what I've seen is, from time to time, and not very often at all, we'll use a temp agency to fill a vacancy, but more often than not, interns are being used to help us and just work in lean.
Do we use temporary positions, sort of long-term temporary?
No, only in the recreation department.
Okay.
And they're called part-time temps.
So
the barriers to recruitment right now, and you kind of hit on it before about the economy, and you'll see a slide later that really shows you're right. The economy makes it tough for us to recruit. A low unemployment rate means that all the good people are staying employed or they're getting scarfed up by other companies, and they have their choice of jobs right now. And in the private market, we cannot compete with their pay. But we have other things that we can offer that are different. We have a better benefit package than most places in town. Our positions, some of them, not all, offer a work-life balance. Stability, depending on what season of life you're in, is a huge one when we talk to people who are a little bit older. One of the things I think that was really valued was during the recession, we said we're not going to lay anybody off. But we're going to, through attrition, not fill some positions to get leaner. But just people really appreciated the stability of knowing that there weren't going to be any layoffs when everybody, we knew people that were being laid off. And also, I think today it's really important that people like to contribute to a greater cause, to have a sense of purpose, and that public service matters. So how can we count how long it takes to fill a vacancy? We definitely have the dates that we put position postings up, and we have dates of hire, but it's not an exact science because some positions we have posted all the time. So over the course of the year, if we hire 30, let's say, police officers and one posting is up, it's hard to see what we're doing. But for instance, running data on just driven by people who were hired in the calendar year of 2018, the postings associated with those hires were posted from May, the year before, until December of that last month. So there's a lag time, which is the interviewing process and going over everything. So for ones that had a direct correlation in the 2018 positions I mentioned above, I was able to do one-for-one counting. And admin services had 8 positions. Their average days to fill was 73. Fire had 12, average days 78. General government had 4, 60 days. Planning had 8, 210 days. The police department only had 2 animal control. So that's not counting police officers or community service officers, duty officers. Public services had 11, 62 days, and transportation had 3, and that was 97 days. So that's how it kind of looks. There are some outliers in there, but that's generally speaking of a good rounded number for what we're seeing.
In the planning numbers, how many of those were planner positions versus maybe other support positions or?
None of them were actual planners. We had a plans examiner, a planning and development specialist, and a permit clerk.
Are those highly technical?
2 of them are. Permit clerk, not so much.
So why the discrepancy there, do you think? Why is that so much longer than some of the other areas?
I think those are specialized positions, and those are positions that exist in, especially planning, exists in the private sector, so those people are going there. I think one of the answers that the director came up with was to do some reclassification and to use some inside talent, change around the job, the operation, what we needed.
And just a question on police department. So how long are we looking at from a time that we offer, make an offer for a new officer, and that officer's on the street doing, and this may be something Chief Ritchie can talk to, but because I know getting them on board is one thing, but getting them on the street and working is maybe a separate thing. So how long are we looking at there for those positions?
I'll defer to Chief.
And actually, the captains, you're working with our training now. Right. You probably got those numbers very intimate. Can we share that?
Close to a year.
Total.
From day one through pre-academy, the Criminal Justice Academy field training, it's over a year.
So then a follow-up question, perhaps. When somebody resigns, it's a year before they are active on the street. So how many resignations do we typically have in a year?
I'd have to get that number from Lori. 20-ish?
Yeah.
15 to 20. And it varies where they're going. Some get out of law enforcement. Some take federal jobs. Some move. Some we recruit. Some come from out of state, go back to their home states. So it varies. It's rare that we have someone leave us to go to another local agency here in the right. Low country.
So in any year, we'd have maybe 10 to 15 positions that are not being utilized because they're in some form of training process?
And I will tell you, sir, that's the person that has zero experience right off the street.
Okay.
We do actively recruit sworn or certified, pre-certified officers, especially for out of state that will move here. And with the new academy process, we can actually get that one turned over a little quicker. This is a 3-week process where they come in, they spend 2 weeks in-house, they get an academy for a week, and then we can accelerate their field training. So we could probably cut that time in half easily with a certified officer out of state. And then we have some from in-state that either relocate here or like some of the smaller agencies. Like we got a young man from Elk University who wanted to get out of that environment, was a police officer. He should be starting here in the next couple of weeks. And he's already sworn from the academy, so he's somebody we can get up and working hopefully within several weeks versus long term. So that is that year is that brand new person fresh out of college, never zero experience to get him all the way through.
Ms. Landy?
I'm not sure if there will be a better time to bring this up, so just in case not, I'll go ahead and ask now. This is a several-pronged question, but several of the biggest issues we deal with, I'm having a meeting in a little while on one of these, is workforce housing, affordable housing for people who are first responders, teachers, et cetera. Certainly town employees would, I think, be part of what it would be good to have close by. And then the issue of the traffic associated when you don't have that. So my question is, what do you find in terms of how many people are applying for jobs that are actually either in Mount Pleasant or really close by versus those that are having to commute from Goose Creek or Somerville? Because I know a lot of our employees are in the North Charleston, Goose Creek, Somerville areas. So I'm just curious.
You make a correct statement. A lot of them are from the Tri-County area. A couple of years ago, we did an analysis, where are our employees actually living, and 40% were in Mount Pleasant. And then we had another large number that were on Isle of Palms and West Ashley, and then a large number in North Charleston, Somerville, Monk's Corner, and stuff like that. So housing is an issue. I know, for instance, a lot of our firefighters are living far away, but then they're only commuting every 3 days. They work, they're off 2 days, they work. So it really kind of depends.
So do you think if we had a better, say, workforce for first responders, et cetera, type of housing program here in Mount Pleasant, that that might actually help us with recruiting? I mean, it might be a stretch, but.
So it depends on the person, really. When I interview people, some people hate commuting, and they will take a job that pays less in order to not commute as far, and others don't mind it. So it really is individualized. But like any other city, you have kind of bedroom communities where people are living in more affordable areas and coming down to, you see it in the traffic reports every day, Mount Pleasant, Charleston. Mm-hmm. That is just a reality.
Which is one of the things we're trying to help work on. And then the last thing is there a way, or do we already try to direct any of our recruitment towards, for instance, the advanced studies at Wando program, where maybe if they need more technical skills to come into their job, or our local universities if they need four-year degree type jobs, do we go out of our way to try to get the folks that really are local as opposed to elsewhere?
So we do job fairs at the high schools, and we do postings down at the College of Charleston. Mm-hmm. I think we can do more and actively recruit those, but then it has to be for positions that don't require any experience. Mm-hmm. So it kind of depends.
I mean, Citadel, Charleston University, anything local, yeah. So just different things, trying to think of ways that we can make it work better in the community.
All righty, so let's talk about onboarding. That's the process where we're getting somebody actually started. So before they start, HR sends an email to them, and we give them some information they need to know their first day of work, what you need to bring, what our benefits package looks like again before we talk about it. And then they start every Monday. Every other Monday, we run orientation. So every Monday, they're coming into HR to complete legal forms, like you have to do the I-9 within 3 business days, and there are things we have to do. Give them their ID badge. And then we do online orientation. So all of the employees get tablets, and they're enrolling into benefits, and they're acknowledging forms online. And then once they finish that, and that usually ends around 1 o'clock on their first day, new hires go back to their departments for the remainder of onboarding. Onboarding can be different things in different departments. Components would be getting a tour of the department, meeting and greeting people in your department and throughout the building or throughout the stations, getting uniforms and equipment, having lunch with somebody, and then moving on to training. When you read HR studies, good, effective onboarding is a predictive for how engaged an employee is going to be. So you have to remember that the interview was the first impression that they got of us, and onboarding is that second big first impression. Do they show up and you're ready for them and everything's in order, or do we just say, here, go for it and get some on-the-job training? So that is really a place where people are looking. I still remember my first day here 15 years ago, And it can be little things. The desk was immaculate. The drawers were swept out. I had a notebook sitting right in the middle with all this resource material. I had a plan for lunch. I had a supply catalog asking if I needed anything. And that really set the tone for me of how serious the department was with me joining them. So onboarding is big. You talked about the economy before. We have figures back to 2002. So turnover is calculated by taking the number of people that leave and dividing it by the number of people that exist in the company today. So you can see in the recession, it was going down. Nobody was leaving. But it's great economy right now. And one of the things that I was looking at is that people are being wooed away, that a lot of people are being sought instead of actively seeking employment elsewhere. That's a tough time. So then I just ran 2 years by the fiscal year, since we kind of just are finishing July 2017 and 2018, July to June. So August is a busy month for turnover. Those are for full-time people. And then the rest is pretty steady. Current stats. Townwide, right now, for this new fiscal year, we are budgeted for 642 full-time positions. 584 are staffed, so we are short-staffed by 9%, 58 positions. If you look at the bottom left, this year so far, for the first 7 months, we have hired 54 people, and 36 people have left. If you look at the whole calendar year, last year we hired 97 people and 93 left. And most years it is almost a wash. The same number that come in go out. And then in the rec department, they are busy, busy people, especially during the summer, and this is really impacted by part-time temps. So far this year they've hired 70 and 25 are off the books. And then last year they hired 110 and 86 were off the books. So they keep some on just for winter breaks and kids come back and they're lifeguards again and again.
Kathy, go ahead.
We have a term at my firm that is called regrettable attrition, and that's the people that are actually recruited away versus non-regrettable, which is retirees, people pass away, other things of that nature. So my question is, what would you say of this are people that are actually being recruited away percentage-wise?
I bet it's a quarter or so.
Okay.
And Angela does our exit interviews. Does that seem spot on or more? It's increased this year. What would you say it's running? About 30%.
I know you're going to get to this, or I think you are. So again, once again, I hate to jump ahead of you, but I'll just mention a couple things. You mentioned some of the reasons why we have a great package, and I'm just going to give an example. A lot of times, and I'm sure you make an issue of this, but just in case people have any doubt in their mind, our health care here is unbelievable. And I work for a firm that has, I know it's over 10,000, it might even be 15,000 employees worldwide now, and yet just the deductible, and I have one of the better plans. I don't have the top of the line because I have this one too, because I pay for both, but that plan, out of pocket, I would have at least a $7,500 deductible before anything other than the most basic checkup is covered. And this plan is unbelievable. Not only are the doctors incredible, but they also, the cost is so small. So I know we're already making a big deal about those things, but when you start comparing pay packages, people need to realize that even in a great big company versus a much smaller town in terms of employees, the packages are not nearly as good as this one. So.
And I think, you know, when I interview, I spend a lot of time talking about that. Our package, when you swirl everything in, time off as well, is worth about 35%. So what I say in an interview is, if this job is paying $10 an hour, you only have $10 an hour to pay the phone bill, but you're getting the value of $13.50 an hour. You could go somewhere else, make $12 an hour, and you would be making less than here when you consider total compensation. Health insurance is a big part of that.
Eric, what does having 9% open positions and 12% vacancy perhaps in a department, what does that do budget-wise for the town? How do you account for that? Do you count slippage into the budget for the coming year in terms of expecting a certain percentage to be vacant? And talk a little about the budget implications of that kind of vacancy?
We do. We're conservative about it. We don't budget for every position, knowing that there's going to be some turnover. Trouble is, as you would suspect, you don't want to get caught short at the end. But we try to best as best we can. But having this level of open positions does tend to yield savings at the end of the year, among other things. So, you know, we try to capture as best we can. We keep a steady approach to it, meaning we don't go as far as to say, well, the economy is or the labor market is really strong, so we're going to budget more. As far as positions that won't be there, we kind of keep it steady, and we look at it on a monthly basis. And if we need to make adjustments, we bring it back to you about mid-year.
Are there any departments in your mind that have a vacancy or turnover rate that becomes problematic in terms of service provision, where it causes difficulty in getting basic services?
Of course. I think the public, in my view, Megan may feel differently. I think the public services department turnover is the biggest concern that I have. I feel when it comes to the other departments, I feel when it comes to police, we have people, I believe, who want to be part of the police department. So some of the turnover you see is more of a natural turnover. I feel the same way about fire. But in public services, I think too often there are critical jobs that have to be performed, and yet we can spend lots of money and time training up employees, sometimes for them to leave for just a short amount of money.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If, you know, 50 cents, a dollar an hour, even though we have a wonderful benefit package, and we might lose somebody.
Thank you.
So I worry about the trash pickup and sure. All those things.
Okay.
Yeah, that really is true. I would reiterate that. Because they're moving for 50. They need to pay the bills more than they need the health insurance. Take care today. Don't worry about tomorrow. That's reality.
In the retirement contribution, which is wonderful on one hand, that's a lot, especially for anybody, where that much of their paycheck is being pulled for retirement, for money that they'll get back one day, but that they don't see right away.
Kind of looking just at the big three departments, fire department's budgeted at 128, staffed at 125. They have three open, so they're 2% below. And I have to give kudos to them. They do the quickest job of recruiting, and they keep as close to budgeted staffing as possible. The police department has 193 budgeted positions, 175 are staffed, so they are 18 short, which is 9.3%. Quite a few of them are actually CSOs and duty officers. That's a tough one to recruit. Public services, they have 146 budgeted positions. 128 are currently staffed, so they have 18 open, 12%. Those are a big three. So the trends that we've kind of seen is, as we mentioned before, certain positions are really just hard to recruit for, and others are hard to retain. Eric just mentioned a segment of employees will move for 50 cents an hour. The climate where we are right now, new grads with no experience want a higher salary. Can you imagine when you were getting out of college, you said, I want a job with X amount. I'll know I made it if I'm getting a job with X amount. Well, now X amount is here for people who've worked and been in the area for in their positions for 10 or 15 years. Younger employees are planning to stay just 1 or 2 years before they move on. Employees do move around between North Charleston, City of Charleston, and town of Mount Pleasant. That is something that we see. And quite a few of our employees come back. The rehire rate to me is very interesting. People leave and they come back and then they say that they appreciated what they had. They didn't realize it was as good as it was until they left.
Doesn't surprise me.
And then one of the things I love to see actually is a number of our employees' children work here. We have some legacies in the firefighting department, and quite a lot of children from all different departments are starting out their careers being lifeguards and in the rec department. So it's kind of fun to see. So retention engagement, how do we assess it? We do a couple of things. We have done employee engagement surveys for the last 4 years. We finished one recently in January, one in 2015. Angela conducts all the exit interviews for any full-time employee who voluntarily resigns. We have informal conversations with employees that stop down the grapevine And then we had a workforce evaluation performed by A.J. Gallagher. It told us about the demographics, what benefits they want, what cultures people are seeking these days for as it relates to the town and our population exactly. And then we are addressing it by taking the engagement survey seriously. One of the worst things that you can do is to do a survey and then do nothing. It's better not to do a survey at all. So I'm really proud of the fact that out of the 2015 survey, 33 objectives in the town strat plan that we are currently in are centered around employees, making their experience better. And then we do a wage and class study every 4 years. We're about to do an RFP this fall. We'll be working on a study, and we implemented one July 1st of 2016. We have a workforce development plan that is in development currently. It's going to be kicked off at our department manager's retreat, and then we'll have some focus groups. One of the things that came out of the strat plan, in addition to workforce development, is an employee relations committee that's had a lot of great traction over the years and a lot of enthusiasm. And they've rolled out a recognition program, and they're doing quarterly events and some big town-wide things. Last night was the River Dogs game. And then we have a mentor program that we started off small instead of jumping into the 12-foot section of the pool, and both the mentors and mentees are really enjoying it so far and feel it's valuable. And then every month in the courtroom, we have employee development sessions. Angela puts those on and gets speakers. Most of them are from outside. And for instance, 2 months ago, we had something on recruitment. So it's trying to be timely and scaled to different employees. And for our workforce development program, one of the things that we currently do and have done for a while is each department has their own career path progression plan. So we've recognized years ago that the workforce here at the town was aging and that there would be brain drain, and we needed to do something about it. And so the department heads were tasked with identifying career paths in their departments. Again, I have to give kudos to the fire department. They've done an incredible job where if you want the next position, here's a notebook. You have to complete this notebook. And it entails doing different quizzes, driving around, acting in that capacity, shadowing people. And every single person does a notebook to get that next position, and they have a notebook when they get into a new position, so it's very formalized. That's worked out really well. And one of the things also that the fire and police department did was recognize that there was a bottleneck to getting to upper management. And so they actually took a rank out of both positions, both departments, so that then more people can compete for the next level up. We have the monthly training sessions, as I just mentioned, and for many years we've offered tuition reimbursement, even when people weren't offering it, for associates, bachelor's, and master's degrees. We now offer scholarship funds for the last few years, meaning if your department doesn't have a training budget for you to go to a certain course, or you want to become certified electrician, then we will pay that. Certificate programs and seminars and conferences. We are developing employees who put their hands up and say they like to stretch. And then coming soon, I mentioned the workforce development program that we're going to kick off at the department manager's retreat. After that, we're going to have focus groups with some of the department managers, and then also another different group with employees. And a key component of that is going to be addressing R&R, not rest and relaxation. Any questions?
You may already have this as part of your monthly or other development seminars, but I'm sure, I don't know this, but you might have someone who comes in to talk about the importance of things like the automatic retirement. But if you had someone, and this is not me I'm trying to talk about, but it is in regard to the industry I'm in, if you have a true financial planner come in as an outside expert to do a seminar on a fairly regular basis, maybe even twice a year, to talk about all these things that people forget. You know, when, as I've said to many clients over the years, when our parents were growing up, everybody had a pension. Today, that's not true. So if you think that it's more important to get 50 cents more so you can pay today's bill than to plan for retirement, you're mistaken, because you've got to have time and compounding. That 30 years or 35 years means a lot. And so maybe having someone come in who can present it both for the retirement and also for the benefits package in terms of health care and all, and how that actually saves them over the long run.
So one of the...
Go ahead.
One of the things we launched into when we started our wellness program years ago was financial matters change your stress level. Mm-hmm. And so we actually did bring in financial advisors. So they were speaking at our monthly lunch and learns. Had that happen several times. We had the person from SCRS speak several times. Brad has a particular passion for retirement. And so at orientation, he talks about, come see me. I want to help you plan for your retirement now. And he'll spend, I'll see people in his office for an hour, hour and a half, which is great, before they're ready to retire when they're young. And then another thing we did probably, 8 years ago, was we ran Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University here at the town during lunch hours and after work. And they make one for the workplace. We did that, and then a couple of months ago, we showed his first video at our monthly training session, and people were just jazzed up about it. So finance is a real thing, and retirement, it is big. We try to tell the younger employees, you know, before you get a spouse and a house and a baby, when you can eat popcorn, invest in your future. It's good for the soul.
Well, I think for some of the things, like the cost of living is just so high, and the rents are so high, and food is expensive, and everything's expensive, where that, if you're making minimum wage, which is, what, $7 an hour, or I mean, even if you're making $10 an hour and you have a family or children, I think that 50 cents can make a huge difference. And so what I'm wondering is if that's a known quantity, that 50 cents is making a difference to some of our employees leaving, why haven't department heads sort of come budget-wise and asked for that increase in salary for that class of workers?
So we do a couple of things. You want to go first?
No, you go.
Every July 1st, we increase the pay scale by the CPI. So it's going up. And therefore, anybody that we hired who isn't at the new minimum gets taken to the new minimum. Then every July 1st, we give merit increases to anybody who's eligible for them. Department managers have the ability to hire somebody above the minimum if their experience warrants it. But it's a fine science and a balance because you want to maintain internal pay equity. People get upset if you bump somebody up just because they need to have a dollar more an hour when I've worked hard for the extra dollar more an hour. So it's a tough scenario for sure.
And in order to help catch that, we've committed to every 4 years doing a wage and classification study, which we have budgeted. Thanks to y'all, we have money budgeted this year to secure the consultant to help us do that. And then they'll come back with the information of showing where different positions are and whether adjustments need to be made with pay, and we would forward those to you. It gets reviewed at this committee, as a matter of fact, and with the help of finance committee, figure out, if you're so willing, how to catch up if we're behind with some of our positions.
And that's actually more frequently than a lot of the other government entities. Some other ones do it every 10 years. So I think it is good that we do that. And I would just say that I've had the experience of working for several of our local government agencies, school district, Charleston County, and at the state level. And just a couple of notes. One is, I've never seen an organization locally here that has the level of employee engagement that Mount Pleasant employees have the opportunity to do. It's a very positive way, I think, and impacts retention greatly, I think, to have things like, you know, all the wellness work that gets done and all the educational opportunities. So I think that is a great thing that we can continue to do. I am concerned about the Public Services Department and the turnover there. If you've ever had the experience of working for a public agency or organization, you know that ultimately the work that gets done are those folks on the front line. And anyone who works in public services knows that with their skills, they can go into the private sector and make more money. So the extra 50 cents may be important to some people, but ultimately salary is not what motivates most people working in public service. because they know they can get more money in other places. There is a mindset in public services that's different. And I think the working conditions, the supervision and leadership that you have, and the mission of serving your community really motivates people to do a lot of tough work in public service. And that's why our competition are City of Charleston, North Charleston, Charleston County, state agencies. So in terms of recruitment, I think we really need to look at those issues and provide an opportunity here that ties into those motivations more than just the money, because people generally don't stick around because of just money. Because we live in an area where folks can make a few more bucks if they need to, but the dedication of our employees in the town, I think, is exceptional, and the quality of the work that gets done is exceptional. And I think just creating a positive work environment and opportunities for advancement is really a key. And I think y'all are doing a great job with that. You know, I would ask that we take a closer look at what's happening in the public services department and whatever strategies we can use to support those folks, especially. One last question, though. Is there anything that you need from council to help you with these strategies that we don't already have on our radar?
Nothing that I can think of off the top of my head.
No, sir.
No. Any other comments from the committee?
Well, there is that wonderful new gym that everybody can use, so that's a plus.
Yeah, it's getting a good workout. All right, anything else? Thank you for your information today. Thanks to the staff for being here and supporting the department, and let us know if we need to do anything for the coming year.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Meeting's adjourned.
Sure, Megan.